they ask us, like, why are you so upset? Like, why do you have to raise your voice? Why, like, why is it when we do talk, I guess, proper way, right? Like, we become more intellectual because we can speak better. You look back in history, like, I just want y'all to sit there. Like, look how you treated our men. Like, look what happened to them.
Yeah.
It wasn't like, oh, am I just going to attack them in a quiet place? You made us watch the actions, the consequences. And you're just be like, oh, yeah, just, you should be okay.
You are now listening to the Front Stabbers Podcast.
Okay.
What's up, guys?
Okay. Are we going to say something?
Hey, welcome to another episode of the Front Stabbers Podcast. My name is Ellen.
I'm Sarah.
I'm Rubens.
I'm KT.
It's all right. We're gonna get it one day, guys. It's okay. I think two episodes ago I messed it up, so it's okay. So we can start this podcast. I wanted to ask you guys. Just some, you know, questions to kind of gaze your understanding of everything that's going on right now. So anybody can jump in. Do y'all think that Black people can be racist?
No.
May I make a statement?
Mm-hmm. Expand.
Okay. I agree with you, Sarah. The answer would be no. And this is why I would say so.
Okay.
In the past, and actually, no. In fact, let me correct that by looking at the current climate right now. We have never been in any positions of influence or of power to influence the way white people are educated, as they've done to us, to influence the manner in which they live, as if they've done to us, to criminalize them the way they have done to us. To have closed doors and opportunities for a job or for a better life as they've done to us, which were all a part of racism. Racism was more than, oh, I don't like you because you look different. It was underfunded schools. It was unstable economics in the community. It was discrimination from police authority, from voting as well. It was multiple areas in which they had an opportunity to influence us, which then points directly to systemic racism. So racism is much more than I don't like you because you look different. We can be prejudiced. We can discriminate. However, yep. to close the door in a white person's face, you do not have the power to. Mm-hmm. I saw a video of an individual that this person worked at Google. Well, previously worked at Google, and they were attempting to apply for a higher position. And they were competing against themselves and a few other individuals. And they lost that position to a Black individual. I don't know if it was a Black man or a Black woman. They didn't specify. They didn't say a Black person. And they were on YouTube ranting about their disappointment and about how they lost the position due to the fact that they were not Black. And I beg to differ because I wonder if they lost it to a white person, would they say that? If they lost it to an Asian person, would they say so? Or if they lost it to an Hispanic individual, would they say so? Or another person from another ethnic group from either Europe or another ethnic group in Asia, would they say that there were discrimination involved or racism involved? They only say that because they lost the position to their competitor, which was a Black person. And the reason why a lot of people are saying that, oh, Black people are taking on jobs, it's not that at all. They say that due to the fact that now Black people have the door and have an opportunity to take up space in a position that was never open to them beforehand. So now they're saying, oh, I lost my job to a Black person. If they lost a job to anyone else, they wouldn't have said that at all. They're only saying that because the door is now open to Black people to take up spaces in an environment, in an occupation that was not opened up to them before. That's my answer.
So, okay, can I go? I'm gonna let you guys answer and then I'm gonna come back.
Okay, no problem.
KT Rubens, you want to jump in? Question was, do you think black people can be racist?
I'll say no.
I think for me, it's... okay, go ahead, KT.
No, you ready? Go ahead.
No, you go. Go ahead, ladies first. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Don't be modest. mine was just simple. I'm just saying. It was just simple. Like, you know, yeah. We weren't the ones, you know, oppressing people.
I'm going to be the odd one. So, you know, like, dear Dino, Sarah, I completely agree with you 100% in regards to what you said. And your stand and your explanation as to why black people cannot be racist in the context of America, right? Because we have to talk about, you know, the system suppressing certain things like that. But I will take a stance and, you know, kind of say like yes and no, or maybe both, because I feel that, to your point, it really depends on what definition are we going by when it comes to racism. Because for a lot of people, it can mean like something different, right? Where some is definitely, you know, the historic, systematic oppression that blacks, people of minority have been facing for decades, for centuries. For someone else, you know, even someone of color, it could be like, you know, me acting in a way that's, you know, wrong to another human being based on their ethnicity or their skin color or all that type of stuff. You know, I feel like some people hate in regards like us defining racism by the systematic thing because they feel that it takes away, I guess, black people from not looking at their own actions or thoughts as to how they react to other people. Mm-hmm. Even people of color, not just white people, even people of color. You know what I'm saying? I know there was something it was something that came out like a while ago, a long time ago, actually. It was, unfortunately, like a scene of, you know, some black man harassing like an Asian elderly guy, right? Mm. You know, like, you know, bothering him, you know, trying to, you know, like take his cane, trying to be violent. The old man broke down crying. And a lot of people were saddened by that because they're saying that, you know, us as, you know, black people, you know, if that was a white person doing that to black people, we would be rioting. But in that specific scenario, no one really wants to say much or really take a stance because, you know, it's black people doing it to another race and stuff like that. So I really think it depends. For me, I do agree it's a systematic historical thing, oppression, and black people can't be racist in that context. But then again, you know, I don't want to say that as human beings, we do not have responsibility to watch our how we treat other people, how we perceive other people, you know, how we all that type of stuff, you know. And I know you guys mentioned it too, that we can't be prejudiced, we can't discriminate, but that's just how I felt about it. This is my little two cents. You know what I'm saying?
So I like what you said, Rubens, and I agree, but I think is it really loud? can you guys hear me?
Yeah,
okay.
We can hear you.
Okay.
We
can hear you.
So I would say that I get what you're saying. And I do believe that, and I think Claudina touched on it, is that racism in and of itself, it's based on like how one race dominates over another. I think what you were pinpointing on, movements, is when it comes to like how black people sometimes like we behave in certain things that are detrimental to like within our community, like colorism, right? Even classism, like when you think about the Caribbean, right? When you think about Haiti, right? Because we're Haitian, so we'll use that. So we do have our own ways of discriminating against each other, but I don't think racism is the correct term. I think it's more like being prejudiced. I think it's more of like if we want to talk about colorism, classism,
right.
Different things, those terms. I think those terms are better and more safe to use than racism. Because if you say black people are racist, then I just think it kind of denotes or like takes away from just what we face here in absolutely. America. So I think it's the terminology we have to focus on. But I completely agree that we have to hold ourselves accountable in certain things, like when it comes to like amongst ourselves, you know. But yeah, I don't think I would use the term racist. But today we're not talking about, you know, the problems that end within the black community. We're talking about the problems between black and white people.
Right.
Okay, I just wanted to clarify that. Okay,
yeah, definitely.
What you
people
say.
Love to point that out.
They do.
I agree with Sarah. that she talked about, and movements, he kind of touched base on it, the systematic historical part of it. That's where I was going with my part. I was like, yeah, we can't be racist. Because, I don't know, it's just like, maybe it seemed like it's common sense when it comes to a black person understanding it. But if it's like a white person, they're like, I just don't get it. But you guys were never oppressed, though.
Yeah. Like, so it's kind of like,
it's the biggest, it, you know. Is. Yeah, exactly. Like, it's right there. I don't
know. That's all you can do. And you couldn't do anything until right now.
Exactly. So
it's not like you can't like sympathize or empathize, right? But to a certain extent, you can only go so far. Like if we're talking about like black and white, like white people can only go so far in understanding our experiences, because some things they just really won't understand. Like even when the thing of like if we talk about microaggressions, they won't get it. They'll think we're being extra, you know, because microaggressions, it's small. It's like the little things that are done to us. So it's like it can to a white person, it might seem like, oh, she's over exaggerating. Like, you know, just because she said this one thing about you know, her hair or something doesn't mean that, you know, she thinks it's unprofessional. She just doesn't like her hair. No, like it all stems back to something. So I think it's just important to like understand the terminology, and also like just understand to like, I don't know, empathizing and sympathizing people. Mainly empathizing.
Now,
yeah.
If I give you guys a definition, before I give you the definition, and I want to see if you guys will change your position.
Okay.
Because I kind of heard a couple of words you guys said. You guys said prejudice, discrimination.
Okay.
So
oppressed.
I Googled this, right? It said racism is, it's a noun, prejudice, discrimination, or antagonism directed against a person or people on the basis of their membership of a particular racial or ethnic group, typically one that is a minority or marginalized. There's another one that says the belief that different races possess distinct characteristics, abilities, or quality, especially as to distinguish them as inferior or superior to one another. Now, the reason why I brought this definition up, I was watching a YouTube video, right? And these guys were making the point that black people can be racist. Because the idea of racism is, like you said, discrimination or prejudice or thinking that you are better than another group of people. And the example that they use is, I'm not sure if you guys ever heard of the story of Rwanda.
Yeah.
How you had one group of, and I think it goes back to what you're saying, Sarah, where we have our own issues with colorism, because in that particular...
That was like classism mainly.
It was, classism, colorism, all mixed up. And it was particularly a dark-skinned group of black Africans that wanted to, they tried to exterminate lighter-skinned Africans.
Well, that was a genocide.
They
for
got
sure.
rid of a lot of them, yeah.
May I make
a in that sense, could you say, well, and I think, like you said, Ruvens, it has to be, we have to put it in the context of America, because I think American racism is different from what it is outside of America.
I don't think what happened in Rwanda was, I hope I'm pronouncing it right. I don't think that was, the caption showed me I pronounced it right. but I don't think that was racism. I don't know. All right.
So you wouldn't say that's racism.
When I think of racism, like I break apart the word. So I think against a race. When I think of race, I think of what we've been taught about, which is like white and black, not necessarily one tribe and another tribe.
That was ethnic issues they had.
That was like more ethnicity, more cultural based. And like I said, like classism and just like, you know, their cultural differences, their beliefs and all that stuff, their religion. So I don't know if that's racism. I don't know, but that does give me something to think about, but. It wasn't
the reason why I said
thing.
That is because
I don't know.
Because within the definition, it said, you know, some discrimination, prejudice against particular racial or ethnic group.
Okay.
So, Ellen, I have a statement to make.
Go ahead.
So, I was actually looking into the history of Rwanda. Earlier this week, actually, Monday and Tuesday. And so the president, currently the current day president, he has served 4 terms in office. No, he served three terms in office, and he's campaigning for his currently campaigning for the his for his fourth term. He is Tutsi, and he speaks about how he left the country, went to lived in Europe, joined the military, came back to Rwanda, and with his military knowledge, helped the Tutsis end the issue. So then when he got into office and they asked him about the issue between the two ethnic groups, he made a very powerful statement. He goes, I do not blame either side for the killings. They asked him why. He goes, the reason why is because this issue is only recent. And if he mentioned, in fact, if you go back in our history, we've always lived in peace with one another. What occurred was when we were colonized, and that caused this.
Man, by a lot.
So then,
it like so never now stops. You have,
so now you have a man that is Tutsi that leads his nation, and actually, Rwanda is known as the Singapore of Africa. I encourage all of you to look into the before and after his term in office. He's done a beautiful change, and I love listening to him speak. His name is Patrick Kugami.
That's cool. I need to look into that.
So it goes to show you, and I believe what you said, Sarah, it wasn't a race, because they were all under the same race. The same nationality, the same race. It was an ethnic issue due to the fact of where their power was stripped from them, from the colonizers. Yeah. And it was, and their relationship was separated because they were colonized, and that would create a scuffle. Colorism, that's due to us being slaves.
Okay,
us being slaves. That was never a thing before. It goes in circle. So when I say that black people can't be racist, I mean that we don't have the authority or the power to influence the Caucasian ethnicities and Caucasian race as much as they have done to us.
Okay. This leads me to the next question.
Okay.
And I think this is one that's kind of controversial.
Ellen is loving this. Oh my gosh.
No, I like this conversation. I like this because, you know, I think it's interesting to have these conversations.
It is.
Because, I mean, a part of me thinks, I mean, I agree with everything you guys say, and I think it's absolutely true. Colonization has infiltrated, you know, minds of Africans, and it has like messed us up completely in the sense we look at ourselves, the way we think about beauty, the way we think about our life, it messed up everything. So I think, that plays a huge role into it. Now, the second question is, do you guys think that black people, we perpetuate this sense of we're always being the victim?
We need more context. What you mean?
And okay, I'll give you a context.
I know exactly what you mean, Ellen. I know exactly what you mean.
So let's say, for example, you were talking about how the job, for example, right?
Oh, the example in the beginning. I use?
Yeah. But I'm just going to flip it, though, in the sense of like, let's say, actually, I'll give you a better example, right? You have two people that's going for a job. And one is black, one is white. The black one doesn't get the job. And they, you know, when they walk out, you know, they kind of look at the place and they're like, man, I didn't get this job because I'm black.
Okay.
Or that notion of like, because I'm black, I wasn't able to be treated in the right way, or I wasn't, you know, like we're getting the rough end of everything. Like, nothing can go right because we're black.
I think we have gotten the rough end of everything.
Yeah.
When it comes to, like, you know, when we were freed, right? Which, you know, Juneteenth coming up. Like, we didn't, a lot of slaves back then, they didn't know it was free until, like, some more years later.
In Texas.
You know? So, like, and then, like, the way that transition in and of itself, too. Like, how that went from, like, you being a slave to you just kind of having to fend for yourself, right? Or not getting the reparations that you needed, right? So we've always kind of got like the short end of the stick, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So I agree with that part. Like, we've gotten the short end of the stick. Like, there hasn't really been a lot of space for us.
Mm-hmm. There you go. That's the word.
Yeah, to space. Kind of, I guess, transition in a way that's like, that allowed us to have like actual true growth, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. I'm not to say that true. We haven't grown, because we have, but I think that's been through our own doing. Yeah. And so I think that answers the question is no, I don't think we do. Because we've been able to kind of get out of that space that we were, those things that we were given, those hand-me-downs that we were given, yes. We were able to create something nice. Way better than that. We were able to make schools, HBCUs, you know? Mm-hmm. We're able to own true. Companies, you know, even right. though we have, like, you know, other obstacles like redlining and all that type of stuff. And we're able to, you know, go to college and get degrees. So it's not like, yeah. I don't think we play the victim, but to say that, you know, our experiences, like, they aren't in some way, shape, or form, you know, shaped by the things, by what happened like 400 years ago with slavery and mm-hmm. everything. Like,
yeah.
we, and Jim Crow, like, we can't say, like, come on now, like, come on. Like, that affects us still. It affects us in every area.
I agree. So I agree.
I don't know. It's a lot. I'm just like thinking of other things to say. It's just a lot.
I have a statement to make.
Yeah.
I'm caught in the middle ground in this. Ooh. Here's the reason why. Because I love speaking to elderly black people. Mm. I'm talking about grandmothers and grandfathers, like 70s
and 80s. The aunties and uncles, yes.
No, the grandma and grandpas.
Oh,
the
aunties grandma and uncles.
I'm not talking about
people in their 50s. You mean the grandpops, mama there, all of them, you know?
Yes. Okay.
And whenever I catch an Uber, and I notice I caught an old man, old black man, I always brought conversations. They have so much wisdom to tell. Mm-hmm. And one question I love to ask them is, if Martin Luther King, I asked this once in a group chat, I don't know if you guys remember, if Martin Luther King and Malcolm X and all the historical black men and women were to come back and see the state of black people today, would they be happy? You know why I asked them that? It's because when they were children, they were alive.
They seen
the peaceful protests of MLK. Mm-hmm. They seen the masculine rhetoric of Malcolm X. Mm-hmm. You know, they mm-hmm. seen the defensive marching of the Black Panther movement. They seen all of it. Mm-hmm. The sit-ins at the restaurants that wouldn't serve you. The bus riot protesting. And I asked them, you know, if all those people that the powerful black men, not powerful, but influential black men and women, were to be alive today, especially those two, Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, were to see the state of black people today, would they be happy? All of them said no. And I asked, why is that? And I said, it's because no one's picked up the slack since they've died. And one person would tell me, it's as if one guy told me, he's actually an acquaintance of mine that I met in Tampa. And this is a black cop. He's a black police chief too. Mm-hmm. And he grew up in the inner city. So he grew up during that time frame, and he was a police officer in the inner city, and now he's a police chief in a very suburban white area in Tampa. Mm-hmm. And so he's seen multiple areas of life. And he was like, honestly speaking to you, Dino, they would be upset at the state that black people are in, because they would feel as if all their work was for nothing. Hmm. And I was like, why was that? And I continued probing him, asking him questions. He said, because when they set the foundation, Dino. They set the foundation. Hmm. And we were supposed to build from that. We haven't built from that yet. And he said, they opened the door for so much of the opportunities we have now that we take for granted. He told me that it was only in the 1950s where you would be shunned for either a black man or a black woman to marry a white spouse. Yeah. Now it's celebrated. And he said, some people think the fact that you can marry a white spouse is the ceiling, the cap of the end of racism. And he's like, the fact that the youth think that way is absolutely pathetic. And it makes me sick.
Dane.
And he was very firm when he spoke with me, and I can hear it in his voice. He was upset at the state the black people are in right now. He said what they did in the past were to set the foundation for our youth. And he's like, and we gave them the ball and they dropped it. me opened so much doors for them. And he's like, you know what he said? The crazy thing is, Dino, when we were leading the civil rights era, it opened the rights. It opened civil rights for every other Hispanic, Asian, and African that comes to this country, right? And he said, Dino, the crazy thing is, the doors that we opened for other black people, they don't even take it. Other people from other countries come and they take it.
That's a whole nother conversation, though. I'm not even going to lie.
It is.
Because that's
But here's the thing.
So what's your other side?
So he made a very great point. His thing is, you know, we played, he's like, but now we ask for more. And he's like, the thing is, we even ask for so much more in that they don't see what they've already made. That way was already done for us already. So I can see why we ask for more, but I can see where he's coming from. What we're asking for, we were already supposed to achieve it long ago. Because our grandfathers in this nation protested and marched for what we got, but we take it for granted. But now they're asking for more.
What do you think made us drop the ball? Like, do you think
our leaders, you know, died
after the Civil Rights Act was passed? We were just like, okay, so this is progress. So we kind of consult. Like, what do you, like, did he tell you why he thinks it? Like, what happened to cause that? Like, what made us stagnant, quote unquote?
I spoke to another black man, about older black man. He told me, he's like, yo, our leaders were killed. He's like, the individuals that set a very high pinnacle for the black man, black women were MLK, Malcolm X, Black Panther movement, and so many other black women that I'm so sorry, I can't name. I feel embarrassed for that, not being able to. But he said, when Malcolm X and MLK were killed, assassinated, and they placed so many other black leaders in prison, it kind of halted the progress we made.
But who was responsible for that, though?
He said that we were all responsible for it.
For them dying?
What? No, not for dying. For us, for continuing the progress. For us continuing the progress. He said something phenomenal that I agree with. He said, now we love asking for so much more help when we don't understand all the things you've been able to do because we relied on the strength and protesting and rights that we have as black people in this country. Mm-hmm. That we're still asking for more rights. And he said, because we're asking for more, we overlook what we've accomplished. And the thing is, if you look at it, in the past, there was a period in time where some of the major inventions in America were accomplished by black men and black women. Yeah. The GPS, a black woman invented that. The technology for a cell phone, a black programmer invented that. Black people invented the AC unit. Black people invented the elevator. They invented the sprinkler. They invented the car radiator. So there were so many inventions that they created during times of turmoil. That now in times where we have more leverage and more room, although we are still making progress, but it's not at the same trajectory. Level.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not at the same level that they were during their times of suppression.
I always have,
you know,
like,
I know I went off topic a little bit, but you can see where I was going, really. Right?
Not really.
I see what you're saying.
So that's why I'm in the middle ground.
How do you feel about the other side, though?
I'm on conflict with that, too, like what you're saying, because I'm like...
But they make sense.
I think from where you were talking with, like, the officer, I feel like where he's coming from is from more of, like, a social standpoint, like a social justice issue, like the political aspect of it, like taking positions in that way, if that makes sense, like the MLKs and the Malcolm X's and all that stuff. Like, I think that's where he's coming from. Like, we aren't taking our positions in that way. But I don't know. I feel like in other aspects, I feel like we have progressed. We have a long way to go.
But not at the same amount of trajectory and intensity that they did.
I understand what you're saying, Dino, and I don't want to go too far in this, but
right,
I think
right.
that
I
he has a valid point in what he's saying, because if you think about it, back then they were fighting racism face to face.
Okay.
Black you get racism. What I mean? So it was more in your face. Mm-hmm. It was more, you know, mm-hmm. you can't live here. You can't drink in this water fountain. You can't drink in da 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 da. You know, there's a lot. There was a lot of macro aggression against black people. Mm-hmm. You know, it was really out there. And I think where I disagree with that is because of Malcolm X, because of them that were now were able to be entrepreneurs and do things, you know, like what they, even though a lot of people may not agree with me, but even though some, you know, people don't do nothing with their life, essentially, that's kind of why they fought for it, you know, because they wanted black and white people to kind of have the same privileges and capabilities. So if a black person doesn't want to progress or move forward in his life and just wants to, you know, just chill and just, you know, do whatever you want, I believe that's kind of what Malcolm X fought for and them. Not so much, yes, they fought for progress and wanting us to elevate our communities and be leaders and be better, but also they fought for just the basic rights for somebody to just live and be black.
Because now that we're talking about it, I think when it comes to the victim mentality, yes, there's systems set in place to kind of, like, we just can't get ahead sometimes. Or not can't get ahead, but it's we have to work like 50 million times harder just to do it, just to get into school, just to pay for school, just to graduate, just to, you know, find a good paying job, just to make sure our kids, you know, don't die, you know, walking down the street or get shot walking down the street just because of the color of their skin. Like, we have to have hard conversations with our kids, like, before we even feel like we should, right? So we have those things. So I think for the victim thing, I think where it comes from is, like, yes, we have things set in place, so we can't take that away. Because then I feel like we take a lot of things away that we experience. But I would say we have to understand that at a certain point, we have to be self-motivated and... it has to be an innate thing for us to want to survive. And it's hard to say, because I don't like taking away from people's experiences, because it's like, well, how can you tell somebody who's in probably a neighborhood or around people where, like, they don't see them doing anything great? Like, how can you tell them, you know, that, yeah, you can make it out. Don't let all these things that you're seeing, you know, keep you from going to college. If you don't know anybody who has a high school diploma, or let alone a college degree, like, how are you going to know to motivate yourself to do, you know? So I think with that question, I don't think we're victims, but I do think we have to have that drive. But what I struggle with is, how can you have that drive if all you're surrounded by is, like, things that just...
negativity.
Are negative, that you don't see anything positive. So then that brings me to, like, I think one of the solutions and what Claudino was talking about with, you know, the conversation he had is that, you know, the MLKs and the Malcolm X's and the Rosa Parks and the Angela Davises and, you know, all these other intellectuals and all that stuff, like, what they helped us to see is that we can do great things. And I think what we need to do now to get to that point is, you know, mentorship. And what we were talking about, like, at Bible study that one time, discipleship. And us, people like us who, you know, black people like us who did get to go to school, who did get raised in two-parent households, you know, not saying that if you get raised in two-parent households that you're just, like, awesome and stuff, but, you know, it makes a difference. We can't lie. When you have two parents who are active in your life, it makes a difference and it keeps you away from a lot of things. I think we, in order to get back to where they were back in the 60s and 50s, we have to kind of go into our own communities and, you know, see how we can walk together with them and show kids, you know, show youth, show people that look like us that you can do this, you know, even if you don't see it around you immediately, we're going to come to you and show you that you can, you know? So I think it's just, it's so many nuances when we talk about stuff like this. So for me, it's like always like a touchy subject, like, to talk about. And
I agree.
Like, having that conversation. It's uncomfortable. And it's just like, I just don't ever want to get to a place where, like, I take away from people's experiences. And I feel like us being Caribbean too, there's like another nuance, right? Because it's just completely like our drive, not to say it's better, but it's just different. because of where our parents come face, from, right?
That's because you also face a lot of classism when you came here and we moved in here with the African Americans.
Exactly, and we value that a lot. So it's just like, okay, because we know that in our country we can't, you know, be making this much. We have to be, you know, in the six figures or whatever. That's what drives us, right? Just like when you have Africans mm-hmm. that come here, like Africans are one of the, or Nigerian Americans are one of the most educated people in America, right? Mm-hmm. Like they hold like, yeah. Like
they hold education to the highest.
Yeah, like master's degrees and doctorate degrees and stuff like that. Like they're out here, but you have to think about like where they came from and their circumstances, right? Yeah. So it's just like this conversation is always so like nuanced. I love it, but it's always so nuanced. And I just never want to take away from people's experiences or be like, oh, you can't play the victim. Some people have a right to, because all they see is just bad things around them. You know, so it's a tough conversation.
You're right. And I would never tell somebody that, you know, hey, shut up, you can do better.
Yeah.
That's absolutely like, wrong.
Sure. And, how can I do better if I don't, ever see better? What is better? And
it's unfortunate, really.
Can but it I would also never say be that. A change? Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, you good, bro.
Saying, can it also be, I think from what Sarah was stemming from, it seemed as if it's cultural.
It can be cultural. Yeah. Like I said, it can be cultural too. Like, just like friends I have and friends I see, like you'll see a pattern where like, their families are all like doctors and nurses and stuff like that. And then you'll see the same thing with them. Like they're going to be a doctor and a lawyer or whatever, or like they're successful in whatever they decide to do, even if it isn't that. So it is like a cultural thing. So I think it just go back to like, what are, you know, us as a people, what are we being surrounded by? And I think it's like on a case-to-case basis when it comes to like that whole victim thing, because yes, all of us, no matter what, victims. We're gonna experience like those things that are set against us. Like you can be a doctor with 5 million degrees and you'll still probably be pulled over and treated like trash, right? So we're all gonna experience those same things. But then I think the victim thing is like on a base-to-base case, because I can't tell a kid who, you know, quote unquote in the hood, who never knew his dad, who all they want to do is make him go like sell drugs, or that's all he knows, right, to how to make money. Like I can't tell him like, oh, you can't play the victim, you could do this. He don't know that he could do this. He doesn't have anybody who showed him that. So it's just, I feel like for that to answer your question, is like it's on a case-to-case basis, in the sense that some people can honestly, you can play the victim card. Because, and not to make it seem like woe is you, like you can never get out. But some people, honestly, they, like life has not been good to them.
Yeah. It goes back to what we're saying. It's like, it's the systematic, you know, it's like this, it's like a cycle, you know, they just, it's like you, if the generation before you was doing the same thing that you're doing now, you just regurgitating
exactly
the same thing that you saw, because you thinking, it's like a cycle, you thinking, and you know, I think it's up to us to break that cycle. And it's like you're saying, it's tricky, because how can you break a cycle if the you have to take in the person's, you know, experience, where they live, how they grew up and all that. And it's hard to break that cycle if, you know, you're an outsider. To them, you're an outsider.
That's why you gotta do life with them. I feel like even if you're an outsider, because like I said, like I have both my parents, I grew up with both my parents, my mom and my dad were very active in my life. So there's certain things I can't like, I can empathize with, but not to the extent of like, oh, I never had my dad. He never talked to me or anything. So, but I think when you do life with somebody and you take the time to listen to them and you don't automatically put the victim stamp on them, but you just like, you just do life with them, I think that helps. You know, it's just a lot. It's a lot. So much.
It's a lot. It's a lot. There are many layers, and the layers are very thick.
Yes. Yeah.
I feel like Ruben's is boiling up over here.
Yeah, go ahead.
No. I'm just waiting. It's okay.
I want to hear from you. Yeah.
I don't want to explode. I'm just going to be quiet and wait. Yeah. It's okay.
It's a lot, right?
Okay. Well, I mean, I was just going to say, we got to address the biggest elephant in the room, which is, you know, with everything that is going on right now with, you know, and with George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, and we seeing what's happening right now in America. How do you guys feel? I want to get like your personal, you know, whether you saw the video, you heard it, like what was your initial reaction to hearing about what just happened?
Dang, man, another one? Crazy.
Mm-hmm. Pretty much. Like another one. Like literally another one. Like, It's crazy. And my, I think, go ahead. Yeah.
No, I was saying I was in disbelief. Mm-hmm. I was literally watching the video and I kept saying, he is going to lift up his knee.
No.
Because I saw the video with no premise. I didn't hear about he died or nothing. Like, I just clicked on the video. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, he's going to lift up his knee.
I'm with you, Alan. Yeah. Yeah.
He's going to lift up his knee. Oh, you know, the guy, the lady's screaming. He can't breathe. He's going to lift up his knee. It's not going to, you know, he's not going to. They bring out the stretcher. He's definitely going to lift up his knee now. And it wasn't until literally they picked him up and I was like, what did I just watch?
You watched a murder, my friend.
I really did. Watched a live murder.
Yeah. And that's crazy. Wow. Yeah.
What gets me so upset is the fact that there are so many cops that are frustrated with the protesting. And my thing is I don't understand why the cops aren't really frustrated with the actions of that particular cop as well.
Exactly.
Because you see a man abusing his power and murdering somebody that should not have been murdered.
Yeah.
And the fact that you're upset at people's outrage, because my thing is, you know for a fact, ain't no way that cop would have done that to a white boy. Ain't no way a white boy or a white woman, ain't no way he would have done that to them.
He would not even have been on the ground.
Exactly.
He would not even been
in
cuffs.
So it goes to tell you. And now officers are speaking out against, oh, I don't like being
labeled
just as if I may attack somebody. And I'm like, so now you don't like feeling that everyone thinks you're a bad person, just like guys always put that on us.
We does this. So, we live this.
So now you're all these police unions are speaking out. They're like, oh, I feel like everywhere I go, all eyes on me and they're recording me.
As soon as
the tables are turned, you can't handle the pressure that you put on other people.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. That's so true.
Now you feel like you're walking the eggshells. I feel like I'm walking the eggshells when you guys are near me too.
Yeah,
you know.
And do you know what I think goes with that is that, I mean, I've been hearing, like, you know, just in conversation with people that are either wanting to be in law enforcement or hearing people that were in law enforcement, and what it is they say is that, which I kind of disagree with in a sense, but they say it's kind of like a fraternity type mentality where you don't turn on your brother. Mm-hmm. In the sense of, like, even though, yes, what he did is wrong, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. you will find few that are going to come out and be like, you know, what he did is wrong. There will be some, but the some that will come out, there's going to be repercussions for them because you're breaking that fraternity, you're breaking that brotherhood, you know? Mm-hmm. And I heard this thing that's, you know, I was watching, they said, you know, if you have 99% of cops that are good, the 1% bad, the 99 doesn't bring out the one that are bad, you have 100% bad.
That's true.
You know, and I think,
accountability.
And that's what I feel like, you know, exactly, accountability and that brotherhood, I get it, you know, but at the same time, what's right is right and what's wrong is wrong. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter if, you know, it's a tight knit thing or not. And I think we got to, you know, somehow, some way we have to break that mentality. Mm. So
absolutely. That makes sense. I absolutely agree with you. It's upsetting because when I spoke to my police chief friend, he told me, oh, Dino, there absolutely is a blue shield. And I was like, okay, that makes perfect sense. Because I was like, yo, why don't cops get in trouble? He said, oh, because there's a blue shield. It's a fraternity where, you know, once in trouble, you know, no matter what you do, you defend them. Because civilians don't understand how it is to, you know, you don't know if you're going to die this day or the next day. I understand. But when someone is abusing the law, you should be upset too. Because now it paints a narrative that all of you are crooked and are just eager to kill somebody. Yeah. So you're upset that people are upset with you. The stupidity of it all. Human nature is so funny.
Yeah. Mm. KT, how you feeling?
Oh, it's a lot.
It is.
Oh, to go back to what you were saying, like, with the video, like, you know, like Sarah said, like, you know, you had hope. Me, again, it was just, oh, wow. Yeah, he's not going to make it. Like, another I knew. Exactly. Another one. And I just knew, but it's like, I don't know, I felt this time, like, it was different. Like, with everything that was going on, because for us, like, we grew up different. Like, we had Trayvon Martin. That was our situation,
yeah.
right?
Right, yeah.
And then now, like, our younger siblings, you know, like, this is what they're having. They're having the George Floyd, the Breonna Taylor. Like, that's what they're having. But we were kind of aware of this, you know?
Yeah.
We knew about it, but it's like, okay, that was one. It was just slight. But there's just so much more going back and forth that it's becoming so realistic. And I don't know. It's just, to me, it's just like, bro, like, will we ever catch a break? Like, is this ever going to stop?
That's a real question.
Like, because it doesn't seem like it is. And then, well, like, I'm going to just kind of jump forward. Getting to the protesting with the cops and everything, like, why can't some of them, like, kind of understand where we are? Like, I have family that's, you know, that's out there, that are cops, that are in that position. And it's hard for them already because they already seem like, you know, like, they're labeled as the bad guys, and they're not. And, you know, Dino had went into depth about that. But I think what a lot of cops don't understand, you can take your uniform off.
Yep.
This right here, my skin tone,
it's on forever.
It's stuck.
Yeah.
I can't take this off.
That's
So I'm sorry if you feel like right now you are targeted because they're, oh my God, they're recording me. They think I'm a bad cop.
Yeah.
I'm like, how do you think I feel when I go to, especially as a black girl, when I go to an expensive store?
Girl.
You have money? Are you sure? Are you sure your car's not going to decline? Is this good? Like, why would my car
decline? Or you don't touch anything. Like, you literally just look.
Yeah.
You don't touch because you're afraid. Like,
exactly.
What they're gonna say? Like, I don't know. Like that.
Yeah, I wanted to touch on that. I mean, we hear the rhetoric of black men being targeted, but I've never really had the conversation about black women and their experiences.
No, bro.
And I think that's also
it's
important
tough out
too.
Here. It's tough. It's beautiful, but it's tough. Like, I love being a black woman, a black Haitian woman, but it's tough, period. But it's tough. Because, like, it's just, like, so many, like, intersections and just so many things, like, within ourselves that we have to, like, our hair, the way we look, the way we talk, the way we act is always being monitored. You know?
Yeah.
And like,
either
these are the things
loud.
that you can't be too loud. You know, you can't be too passionate, you know, because then it means you're angry. Right.
Mm-hmm.
I know for me, one thing I like struggle with is like I have my friends. They're like, Sarah, you're so sweet. You're so sweet. And I'm like, thank you. But when I go out, I'm like, dang, like I wonder if like other people, like white people, do they know if I'm sweet or not? Or is it just like, no, she's a mean, and you know, I'm thick, you know? So it's like, I'm big black girl. So it's like, would you take the time to kind of discover that Sarah's sweet? Or what is it just going to be like, no, Sarah's another, you know, mean black girl.
Another one,
right?
Yeah,
and like the thing with the store, like when I go to stores, like, especially like, if I'm just, because I love to window shop, you know, it's third rule. So I just love to window shop. And it's like, even touching things, I'm like, I'll touch it, you know, to look, but I always make sure to like, kind of go like this, like look up in the air and like make sure I put it back down where I found it. Make sure like, I try to keep my hands out of my pocket as much as possible. I'm always afraid like, if the sensor goes off, you know, like, that's my biggest fear because the sensor has gone off on me before, but like I know I don't steal, but it's like, do other people know I don't steal, you know? So like different things like that. It's just, and this whole thing of just like preconceived notions, and it's kind of like unfair how like you just don't get a chance to be, you know, like there's already just like this preconceived notion or like misconception about who you are, you know? So it's a lot. It's really tough.
Yeah. I'm glad you said that, Sarah. Like, I just add a quick point on it. With Sarah saying the preconceived part, like, they ask us, like, why are you so upset? Like, why do you have to raise your voice? Why, like, why is it when we do talk, I guess, proper way, right? Like, we become more intellectual because we can speak better. You look back in history, like I just want y'all to sit there. Like, look how you treated our men. Like, look what happened to them.
Yeah.
It wasn't like, oh, am I just going to attack them in a quiet place? You made us watch the actions, the consequences. Mm-hmm. And you're just like, oh, yeah, just, you should be okay. You know, you should be happy. Like, you should be like, what? No, I'm hurt. Yeah. I'm upset. I'm allowed to have feelings. And I wish a lot of people, a lot of people would just stop making it a problem for us Black women to express how we feel without it being like, oh my gosh, you might want to lower your voice down.
Yeah.
Why? Like I'm already Black anyway.
The tone police. Like, that's another, like, we, and I make sure, like, myself, I watch myself, like, especially with, like, our girls, Kerlinski, like, if they're loud, if they want to be loud, like, I low-key let them be loud. I'm just like, be loud, because, like, I don't want to.
What can they do?
Like, that's what I think
you're
about.
You're already afraid of us because we're Black.
Exactly.
So,
and I think about make a that. Difference? Like, with, like, if I have kids, you know, like, if I have a daughter, I don't want to be like, oh, no, calm down, like, chill out. No, like, go ahead and express yourself, right? Because, like, that's our one way to, like, we're resisting, you know, like, when I let you be completely who you need to be. And but it kind of sucks because at the same time, yes, you can be yourself, but I'm still going to have to teach my kids, like, in certain places, you're going to have to tone it down. Because they won't want to see you any other way if you don't tone it down. So it sucks. It really sucks. Like,
Can I make
trash.
A statement?
Go ahead.
Go ahead, you know.
I want to add to what Kulinsi said, you know, that, you know, if you look in history, how they treated the men and whatnot. I remember when I was at Apple, there was a coworker that was talking about how they're, I was sitting next to them. They're bold too. They didn't care to say this right in front of my face, right next to me. And I kind of let it slide, which is my fault. I should have been nipping in the butt right then and there. Mm-hmm. But he was talking to another coworker about how, you know, his son is dressing up for, you know, African American. Black History Month, and they're like, oh, what's your son gonna be? And he's like, oh, my son's gonna be Ray Charles. He's one of his favorite magicians. I was like, oh, and the guy, he was Hispanic. He was like, that's all? Like, of all the people he could be, he's gonna be a magician? Not saying he didn't do anything good, but, like, there's a lot of, you know, people who did a lot of things.
Hey,
like,
Ray History Charles Month is a legend.
He is a legend, but he was talking about more or less civil rights leaders. That's what he was talking about. That's what the Hispanic dude was going to. And, okay. And I understood where he was going to with that.
Okay.
And he's like, oh, no, I don't want my kid knowing that much about African-American history. Oh. So it goes to show you, Kulinsi, that what they do is they committed the crime. They committed the historic act for 600 years, right?
Okay.
But they don't want to even acknowledge it for some reason.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yes, they don't want to acknowledge it. And I remember watching a video of a white dude talking about why, how he used to be racist. He came to God and he overcame his racism. But he talked about why he was racist. He said there is an underlying fear that a lot of white people have about Black people in this country. They are the reason why they close doors to positions of a lot of power, a lot of influence, is because they know that when you get enough of them in that in those positions of power and influence, they're afraid of the repercussions they'll have to pay for what was done in the past, and it strikes fear in them. He said they despise Black men and Black women in power. And that's the statement he made. That was just his video. And he said, because there's a fear in the Black men and Black women in power. He's like, they'd rather you be ignorant. They'd rather you be ignorantly bliss than you be socially aware.
So, I'm going to pause you right here, Dana. Hold on. In this particular scenario that we're in, I want to touch on something else. So before we kind of get into the other stuff, how can we find grace and forgiveness within this climate that we're in right now? And I'll let you talk first, Rubens, because
let Rubens go ahead,
because I think, you know, it's an important conversation to have at, you know, because we have to have it as Christians.
Yeah, we do. Mm-mm.
And although, you know, we as Black, you know, people, we are faced with the same injustices, but I, you know, also our faith ties in to whatever our struggles that we're in. So I want to just get our thoughts and, you know, how do we find grace and forgiveness?
That's a good question.
Right. So, all right. So I'll first kind of go from a perspective of a Christian, and then I'm going to talk from a perspective of a Black person. So, you know, for a Christian, you know, to be able to grant grace and forgiveness, you know, that's just us looking at our relationship with God, right? Where God said, hey, you know, here I am. You know, I created a whole planet of people who doesn't want to know me, who's been opposing me, who's been dishonoring me, who's been being against everything that I stand for, that I am. Mm-hmm. But yet I'm going to go and meet them where they are. I'm going to send my son and, you know, and sacrifice everything just so, you know, I can create a bridge that we can connect and we can walk together again. So as Christians, you know, like, you know, by God granting us forgiveness and grace, you know, because Ephesians chapter 2, you know, it talked about how we're all enemies. Yeah. Everyone is the enemy of God. You know, before we were saved, before we accepted Jesus Christ, we were an enemy of God for what we did, for our actions, for us, you know, choosing ourselves over Him. So He had no, you know, he had the freedom to not, you know, to choose not to pursue us and things like that. But yet, in spite of that, He chose us and, you know, He gave up everything so, you know, He can reconcile and we can have a relationship. So because God can forgive us, you know, as Christians, we have learned how to forgive our enemies. You know, we have learned how to give grace in situations or in scenarios where it's impossible, where it's beyond our human nature to do so, rightfully so, because we're upset, we're seeing war, we're seeing wrong, we're seeing injustices. But yeah, there's something about, you know, the gospel and Jesus Christ that helps us overcome those human limitations and to extend grace where it seems impossible. Now, you know, going as a Black person, you know, when it comes to grace and forgiveness, the first thing I want to say is that forgiveness does not mean, you know, we're going to ignore the act and pretend that there's not going to be any consequences. Forgiveness does not mean that we're just going to, you know, bat our eyes and just turn our backs around and just say, okay, there's nothing else to be done. All that stuff that happened is over with. Let's just sort of like, you know, there has to be action, right? For someone to, you know, to be truly sorry, you know, you have to take steps to, you know, reconcile, you know? And I think for some people, you know, that's a word that they forget. Reconciliation, meaning two parties are both coming together to work it out, to come to a conclusion, you know what I'm saying? To, you know, to take action, all that type of stuff. So as a Black person, you know, living in this world, I definitely understand why, you know, some people are saying, you know, I cannot forgive what the system or whites or what, you know, this or that, what these people have done to my ancestors for centuries. I cannot forgive or forget the pain that they have caused. I cannot forget or ignore, you know, the oppression that I face every single day, the fears that I have to carry with me as I leave my door. You know what I'm saying? The fear that I face, you know, when, you know, a cop pulls me over and I don't know if that's going to be my last moment. That is something that we cannot forget. Our psyche cannot regress those memories at all. We cannot throw away those fears or throw away those concerns or throw away the pain. You know what I'm saying? But something that we need to do as Black people is that, you know, we need to be able to be, we have to carry the burden, to be very, very honest. We have to carry the burden to be able to be like, okay, I need to forgive in regards to, like, if I hold on to this anger, this poison is going to kill me. It's going to eat me up. I cannot spend the rest of my days living in fear. Yeah. I cannot spend the rest of my days being crippled by anger. I cannot spend the rest of my days being so angry that I refuse to do something. We cannot live that way. Mm-hmm. We're going to rob ourselves of the joys of life. We're going to rob ourselves of being able to produce a future for our children, for our families, and even for our communities. You know what I'm saying? We are really burdened to take up the cross of being Black and make something out of it. We really don't have a choice. You know what I'm saying? I think the best example I could give was, I heard a story about Dave Chappelle, one of his comedy shows, where he was doing stand-up comedy, and then he was talking about how he's afraid of his son, because you know, when, you know, he heard that, you know, cops have now body cams and everything's like, oh, okay, snap, that's great, because if a cop does something wrong, he has the body cam, and then, you know, they'll be reprimanded, there'll be you know, consequences. But I'm not seeing that, because we're literally seeing crimes happening right off on the camera, and then nothing's being done to the cop. I'm afraid for my son. And then a white lady in the crowd, you know, who had a specific hat on, you know, shouted, tough luck, get over it. And like, that's what she said legit and wow. out loud in the whole show. Tough luck, get over it. You know what I'm saying? And his reaction or his response was class, just class personified. Mm-hmm. So what he decided to do was that instead of, you know, like going at her mm-hmm. roughly so he can get angry and upset as it's perfectly understandable that he could and he should have.
Yeah.
To some, you know, he decided to take time to educate her.
Okay.
You know, to say, yeah. you know, to talk about the histories of police brutality, mm-hmm. to talk about what people have been marching for, to talk about the sacrifices that Black leaders, you know, have been doing for years.
That's important.
To talk about, like, you know, all these things that's been happening where you think that this is the past, but this is case by case by case by case of this specific thing happening now. You know what I'm saying? You know, and at the end of the show, you know, she actually came up to him. You know, and she had a friend with her. Her friend was embarrassed for her because it was just like crazy. But, you know, but she was like, you know, I really want to say thank you for educating me. Mm-hmm. Thank you for taking the time mm-hmm. to tell me how I was wrong. To really take time and help me understand this perspective that I never could ponder because, you know, of my skin and my experience and things like that. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? In that moment, he says, like, you know, you're very welcome. You know, what I want you to do now is take what just happened today to take this experience and share it with your other white friends. So that when you hear this same exact response that another white person gives or says to another Black person, I want you to tell them what you learned here today. Hmm. And that is the way that you can make change. That is the way that you can take action, you know what I'm saying? And be a positive change in regards to this issue. You know yeah. what I'm saying? And, you know, like she cried, he hugged her, they took a picture. And, you know, that was just like a beautiful story. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, as Blacks, as frustrated as we are, as painful as it is with our experiences, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, we have to extend grace and forgiveness, you know, to those who want to receive it. We have mm-hmm. to understand there's going to be people, blondes, that's like white people, whatever, yeah. that's just never going to understand our plight. They're never going yeah. to understand our situation. They're never going to choose to yeah. sit down and have a conversation. That's they true. Will never, ever, ever get it. That's just their nature. That's yeah. their experiences. And we have to overlook that. I cannot sit and expect like every person, every white person or like to be sorry for what they've been doing. I can't.
Mm,
you know what I'm
real.
Saying? I think that's impossible.
It's tough, but it's real.
But what I need to do is take the time to educate myself, to educate those mm-hmm. around me, to educate those who want to listen and have that conversation and carry on, you know, like my cross to make changes, you know, when other people don't, you know, won't do it. I one of the biggest things I tell myself is I feel like as Black people, we cannot expect or we cannot sit and wait and be idle to wait for somebody else to do these changes for us. We have to take our own action.
Big facts.
The people who get what we're going through is us. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, and we're it's just going to be on us to take those changes, to get educated, to encourage people to vote, to encourage people to take a stand, you know, to challenge people in power to do something, to challenge us who have a voice to do something, you know, to all this type of stuff, man. Like, so that's how I feel on the whole issue of grace and forgiveness. Like, mm-hmm. we have to extend, like, if all this poison, all this anger, poison, it can poison us. All this anxiety, all this pain can poison us. It gets to us mentally. Mm-hmm. Like, I know some of us, we stay away from social media a little bit because seeing all these negativity, these things happening, it just boils our blood. Rightfully so. We're emotional beings. We have this righteous anger. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? But at the same time, we also have to be like, let me take a moment to breathe. Let me analyze the situation. And now let me see what must I do or what can I do or who must I challenge or whatever to make a change. Because, you know, I cannot allow the past to, you know, curse my present life right now, my presence, my whatever. You know what I'm saying? I cannot allow what has happened then to cripple me into not taking action. A lot of times we get too comfortable with our pain. Mm-hmm. We love to complain, but we don't want to do anything. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? For some, you know, but it's us, you know, being able to look at the situation and just like, you know, I need to do something. I need to move. So that's like my little two cents.
That's good, Uvins.
Yeah, no, we needed that.
Yeah.
So for our listeners, Sarah kind of compiled a little resource guide for, you know, those of us that are struggling or those of us that probably listening to this right now and have no idea what we're talking about, keratin, what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. So I'll pass it on to you, Sarah.
Okay, so these tips are just for people who want to be like true allies, like people who say like you really care for Black lives, you want to help us or not even help us, just stand with us and fight alongside us. So these are just some things. So in this list, you can read and watch, listen and empathize, and then move. So for read and watch, read books by Black people, about Black people, and for Black people. Why? Because no one can speak more or translate the Black experience in a better way than those who live through it. If you want to know about a people, you have to go through their stories, their accounts, and their experiences. That's what helps us to break away from our biases, our prejudices, and our preconceived notions. Listen is don't insert yourself into the conversation or try to draw from an experience that probably holds no real weight or relevance to the situation at hand. So maybe somewhere else, the story that you had would have been good or relatable for another instance. But when we're trying to empathize with someone in general, it is best to keep their own personal story and occurrences at the forefront and the forefront alone. It's okay if you can't literally relate. The fact that you just want to sit with us while we process in the way that we know how is good enough. Also, show empathy and display compassion. Don't try to minimize the situation or feelings of Black people. Just because you have not directly experienced racial injustice, racism, or prejudice doesn't negate our experiences. We aren't exaggerating, I promise. Sit in our feelings with us, even if it might not make complete sense to you. By listening, you will begin to understand, which is what Wuvens was saying. So to move, after you've posted or reposted, written, shared, tweeted, retweeted, signed the petitions, and made the calls, all of which do help and have made impact, it's time to move within your community and your own circles. The fight to end injustice and to have true equality and racial reconciliation goes beyond social media and instead transfers into the tangible real world. This means continuously having those tough conversations with your friends and family who still don't get it, speaking up when you clearly see an act of injustice occurring, engaging in community service activities and social change initiatives. To find out where you can be best of help, Google is truly your best friend. We shouldn't have to give you all the information to learn to do the work as well. Like literally, like any, like if you want to get involved in your community, just literally Google what's in your community. What, if you have a Boys and Girls Club, right? If you have, I don't know, some type of nonprofit or something that is catering to a specific group that you want to help or you want to partner with or you want to stand by, then go ahead and Google that. Put your address in, put your location in. In all, to love, fight, and stand with Black people well and authentically, you have to truly understand them and their experiences and be willing to self-assess and check your own inherent biases, right? And we talked about that earlier, which means white people, yes, even though it's for white people, but also Black people ourselves. Like, what keeps us from wanting to teach or to forgive, you know, white people? And so for my white brothers and sisters in the faith, God is very clear on where he stands in terms of justice. So I did provide some verses for those who are Christian, who are white, who don't understand, or who try to minimize what Black people are experiencing. So in scripture, in Micah 6 verse 8, it states, "Mankind, he has told each of you what is good and what it is the Lord requires of you, to act justly, to love faithfulness, and to walk humbly with your God." And in Isaiah 1 verse 17, it states, "Learn to do what is good. Pursue justice, correct the oppressor, defend the rights of the fatherless, plead the widow's case or cause." So let's be on the right side of history and let's do our duty because it's a part of the gospel mission. And, you know, we're a Christian podcast and that's like always the main goal. Yes, we're Black and that's never going to change. We're Christian and we're Black. These two things, I feel personally, are synonymous. They go hand in hand. So it's the gospel mission to fight for what's going on right now. So that's the little tips that I had to share.
Thank you, Sarah. And thank you for listening to us. I know this might be heavy, and it is heavy, and I'm not even going to minimize the heaviness of it. I think it's an important conversation for everybody to listen to and have. So thank you for listening to the Front Stoppers podcast. My name is Ellen.
I'm Sarah.
I'm Rubens. I'm looking at KT. Sorry, KT.
One day. Just one day.
I'm KT.
All right. And keep our sister OG in your prayers. She was not here with us today, but she'll be back next episode.
Yes.
And we ouch.
Bye.
All righty.
Bye.
Don't forget to vote. Bye.
Yes.